So one of the things I want to do today is I would like to start our year, and I'm going to do a very short message from the Beatitudes, which is something that I've done before. In fact, if you are very astute, you'll see that I'm going to use the exact same notes because I enjoy that repetition. And I think, so for the Christmas message, there's always a section that I say for every year, for many, many, many years, there's a section that I've kind of written, which is more poetic prose than anything else, that I really, for me, says something about my feelings at that time of year. And I think at the beginning of the year, when we're saying we want to have a vision, we want to have a plan, we want to know where we're headed for the next season, I think that when Jesus did that, he started with the Beatitudes. When Jesus got on the Sermon on the Mount, he said, I am going to start something profound now. And here is the message that Jesus shared. So I think that we too should start there. So that's what I'm going to do today. I'd like to start in Matthew chapter 5. So if you have your Bible, you can follow along with me. It says, now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. And his disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. So there is a place today that you can visit called the Mount of Beatitudes. And it's obviously where their best guess at where this sermon took place. And there is a beautiful chapel there, and there a monastery there. And you can see from that place all the way down to the Lake of Galilee. It's some way up the hill, though. So Jesus, he sees the crowds, he sits down. I love this in verse 2, it says he took a deep breath. That's the NT Wright translation, which I think does a better job. In the Greek, it literally says that Jesus opened his mouth and to teach, then saying. He opened his mouth to teach. So normally it would just say whatever Jesus said, and then it would say Jesus said it. Or Jesus said this, and then he would say it. But in this case, it has this weird kind of phrasing where it says he opened his mouth, or he began to teach them and saying these things. It's a deep inhale. Jesus knows what's coming. He knows he spent, the best part of 30 years leading up to this moment, and he knows as soon as he opens his mouth, it will begin in earnest. This is when he is going to turn the tables, so to speak. This is the moment where it all starts for Jesus. So he takes a deep breath. He sits down. He looks out across the crowd, and he goes, and I don't think he does the whole Beatitudes in one breath, but that's the sentiment that I get here. He breathes in all of the moment of the anxiety and the stress and the build-up and the prophecy and everything there is. He breathes it all in and he says, and now here is what I have to say to you. Blessings on the poor in spirit. This is where Jesus starts. He doesn't start with, and now I come to bring about your vengeance. Israel, I have come to give you your place of honor and to destroy your enemies and to sack Rome and Babylon and to remove all of these things from you and to elevate you in power and status and majesty. No, he says, blessings on the poor in spirit. The kingdom of heaven is yours. Which is an incredibly revolutionary, ridiculous message because he's saying the people who are least, the people who have nothing, the people who are downtrodden and broken, the people who are poor in spirit, the kingdom of heaven is yours. The promises are for you. Blessings on the mourners. You're going to be comforted. Again, this is a radical, it's a manifesto, it's a new kingdom. Blessings on the meek. You're going to inherit the earth. At this point, I think he probably needs to take a breath. And the whole crowd, I bet, is taking a breath too. All of them, they've turned up and they're like, who is this guy? Is he going to? And then all of a sudden, he elevates the status of the low and the mourning and the meek. And just as he took in a deep breath and shared this, I think at this point, everybody in the crowd is taking in a deep breath. This is a radical message. Blessings on people who hunger and thirst for God's justice. You're going to be satisfied. Blessings on the merciful. You'll receive mercy yourselves, blessings on the pure in heart. You will see God. Blessings on the peacemakers. You'll be called God's children. Blessings on people who are persecuted because of God's way. The kingdom of heaven belongs to you. Blessings on you when people slander you and persecute you and say all kinds of wicked things about you falsely because of me. Celebrate and rejoice. There's a great reward for you in heaven. That's how they persecuted the prophets who went before you. This message, we know now from the vantage point of history, we know now that this message changed the world. This completely screws up the cultural and religious and political and social order of things. A whole bunch of issues that they had considered to be done and settled and finished, all of a sudden now Jesus is going to start overturning them. All the things that they have been told by the powerful and the educated and the institutional systems, he's going to start to unravel them at their seams. It's a total rewrite of the social contract. You have heard, but I tell you. You have seen, but I show you. You have the promises, but I am going to fulfill them in ways that you cannot comprehend. This is a revolution of the power structures and societal norms that permeated the Roman culture, the Greek culture, and the Jewish culture. To all of those who were assembled before Jesus on this funny little mountain on the side of a lake, Jesus is sharing a message, and with a deep voice he says, I am going to transform your entire world and destroy all of what you've expected, and I'm going to do it with love and peace and hope. I'm going to do it with mercy and justice. I am going to do what God has always promised will happen. I am going to make it true. In the first century culture, honor and status were incredibly important, perhaps even more so than they are in our culture today. And being victorious and mighty and powerful and wealthy and successful, these were what it meant to be great. But the Beatitudes, they herald a total change and a flipping of that narrative. They are the promise of God that justice will be done, and the kind of justice that doesn't just punish punitively. It's the kind of justice where broken and wounded and bereaved and ripped off and hard done by people finally get what's right. The wrong things get overturned and made into right things. And no longer will the rich and the powerful and the violent and selfish and gluttonous, the warmongering, the unmerciful and the wicked get the last laugh. The Beatitudes offer hope of restoration and justice and a new kingdom. So if you are exhausted but still holding on in spirit, if you are grieving or in despair, if your gentleness is triumphing over your violence, if you are seeking for God's justice in the world, if you are merciful and pure and making peace, if you are persecuted or mocked for following Jesus, celebrate and rejoice. The time of citizenship and comfort and prosperity and satisfaction and mercy and theophany and adoption and inheritance and reward awaits you. And that which is hidden will be revealed, and the poor will become rich, and the last will become first, and the small will become great, and the hungry will be filled, and the weary will find rest. The mourners will be comforted, and those who weep will laugh, and the sick will be healed, and the blind will receive sight. And the prisoners will be freed, and the humble will be exalted. Amen. And when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and he sat down. And he took a deep breath and announced to the world that something new was about to happen. The holy space of heaven was going to take shape in the earth and transform it, and nothing would ever be the same. So it is my prayer that we start our year focused on what is true and good and proper, that we aim ourselves in the direction of peace and justice and mercy, that we find ways to love both within and outside of our community. I pray that we would cause a holy ruckus, that people would be shocked by our generosity and by our kindness, by our hope, that we would open the door wider and make the table more lavish with more seats, that we would take down walls, that we would do everything we can to invite in the poor and invite in the broken and the hurt and the persecuted, those who have been maligned and mistreated by the world and the church alike, that we would be a safe haven and a sanctuary and a refuge. I pray that we would celebrate joyfully together, and that we would mourn with one another and care for one another in times of grief and challenge. There's something of a wedding vow kind of feeling to partnering together in mission. And I think it's important that we start our year and we say, yes, let's do this together. Let's be on a mission together. As I wasn't sure that I was going to share this today, but as I have been preparing, that there is a verse that keeps coming to mind for me. I didn't want to share it because it's in the context of what is not an especially great passage for the church. But maybe let's just hear it for what it is. This is in Revelation chapter 3. This is to the church in Sardis, which is a place you can still visit. There's not a lot there, though. In verse 2, it simply says this: "Wake up, strengthen what remains and is about to die, for I have found your deeds unfinished in the sight of my God." Strengthen what remains and is about to die, for I have found your deeds unfinished in the sight of my God. This isn't meant to be a rebuke to the church of Sardis so much as it is an encouragement that there is unfinished business for them. And I believe that to be true for us as well. The promises that Jesus made on the Mount of Beatitudes are not fully come to pass. They are now, but not yet. And we are part of that not yet. And we have a responsibility to make it so. And so I would like to do that with you this year.